Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. David is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of financial experience. And because he actually provides advice to clients on a daily basis, our hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory Services and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. Commentary given during this radio program is usually pretty smart, but should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities should not be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual's situation. Only if you hire David and his firm to help you, and only available where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Here he is, David Holland.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I have for you a very special guest. I know I say they're all special, but boy, this one really is. Especially since he's sitting in his studio with me. I better say that. I'd like you to welcome to the program Kim Balk. Hi, Kim.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's Mike's, my pleasure. I've known Kim for a long time now, longer than we'll admit, but at least 10 years, right? 10, 12
yes,
years?
Yes,
so
at least.
Kim is an attorney. She is with Ruse, Ziffra, and Caldwell. And the website for today's program, if you'd like to get more information, ruseziffra.com, two F's in that, ruezifffra.com, or 1-800-JUSTICE.
That's correct.
That's it. We got the number. All right, so I invited Kim on because I wanted to do something that I haven't seen done yet, Kim. I've seen, you know, everyone, of course, has seen plenty of advertising for attorneys for various things, personal injury, medical malpractice. And, of course, you've seen plenty of advertising for financial advisors and what we do, too. So, to be fair, but I think sometimes, and I spend a lot of time on my show talking about how financial advisors work or how they can work. I've written a book about it. But I was real curious, and I thought you could help us, because I think when people, something happens, they're not sure what to do. You know, something happens to a loved one, something happens to themselves. Where do they start? When do they start? How does it work? It's like this big black box, and so people, you know, I know what I would do. I would call you and say, okay, Kim, this happened. But, you know, I think there's a lot of mixed information in the marketplace about what do I do. In fact, some of the attorney ads, and I'm sure you know which ones I'm talking about, they make it sound almost like you're supposed to call them before you call the ambulance, you know.
Right.
So let's do this, if you would. Let's first start with, I know a big part of what you do is medical malpractice.
That's correct.
Okay. And part of that is because you've got your background. Kim graduated at University of West Florida, got her JD, her Juris Doctorate from Loyola University School of Law, admitted to the Florida Bar back in 1985, practiced in Daytona Beach area for 16 years.
I've been in Volusia County since 1985.
Wow, okay. Excellent. That's a long run.
Thank you.
Long run. Okay, but you've spent a lot of time also, though, specifically in the medical malpractice area. So for the listeners, help them understand, because that can mean a lot of different things to different people. What is medical malpractice? What is it that somebody might have a cause of action or a something they might sue over?
All right. Well, from the beginning, I'm available to take phone calls all day. And I have a full-time nurse that works with me on my staff, and she also takes phone calls. And most people do call in and say, I need to speak to somebody. I'd like to speak to somebody about an incident that happened with me, my son, my mother. And we do a screening type of situation over the phone first. And what we listen for are the criterias in the Florida law, the medical malpractice statute, that allows us to screen a call to determine if there's been medical negligence. And the Florida law has a lot of technicalities in the medical malpractice law, and that's one of the reasons that this is a specialty area. Not many attorneys do specialize in medical malpractice cases. And so what we listen for, one of the first questions that I ask is, are you complaining about a doctor or a hospital or both? What type of healthcare provider is it that you're complaining about? And then we just say, generally, tell us what happened. And then we ask the questions that we need to know, because we're listening for negligent care. Florida law requires the plaintiff, the person who is complaining, to prove negligent care. and that the negligent care directly causes an injury.
So it can't just be negligence. It's got to actually cause a problem.
Yes, and we listen to loads and loads and loads of phone calls every day and all week long where we are convinced that there has been negligent care, but the injury hasn't appeared. And Florida law will not let us take a case of just negligent care unless it results in an injury. For instance, and I tell this to people on the phone all day long, if you go to the emergency room and you're complaining of the worst headache in your life, and the doctor orders morphine for your headache for pain relief, which is a standard okay drug to give, a small dose of morphine, and the nurse comes and gives you Tylenol, well, that's a deviation from the standard of care. The nurse is not supposed to give you something that the doctor hasn't ordered. If your headache goes away, it's not actionable. Florida law will not let you act on the negligence. Right. So those are the things that we listen for, the criteria that we listen for. The other thing that happens is once we, if we screen the case and we would like for the client to come in, we ask, what type of records do you have now? What could you bring in with you? And we do ask a lot of times for the patient to pick up their own medical records. And it's for two reasons. Florida law requires an investigation, and that means that we have to get the records and the x-rays if it's an x-ray case. And we have to have them evaluated to identify the areas of negligence, if any, or maybe there isn't any once we get the records. We listen to the story and we get the records. So
which is sometimes different, right?
Sometimes can be different. So if the patient already has their records, it expedites us being able to do an investigation. Plus, it also, if you're unhappy with this particular healthcare provider, you probably don't want to keep going back. So it helps the patient establish with a new doctor with a set of records saying, this is what's been going on, this is what's happened to me, and this is why I'm changing care to you. Would you look at this so you know where I've been in the past and what's been going on with me in the past?
Well, and I think for a lot of people, they say, okay, well, that understand, Kim, how do I get the records? What do I do?
Okay. If it's a hospital, you go into the records, the medical records department, and they will have a form for you to sign authorizing, it's actually a HIPAA form, authorizing them to give you your records. Same thing with the doctor's office. They generally have their own forms that you can go in and sign authorizing them to give you your records. They have to give you your records. They can't refuse to give you your records because you have a bill with them that you haven't paid or that... now it's electronic. These records are electronic, and many of them are charging. They can charge. Many of them are charging a dollar a page and putting it on a disc that costs a dollar. So we are in the throes right now of the electronic medical records story, and trying to get the electronic medical records on a disc at a reasonable price for people. But most of the doctor's offices will still give you a paper chart. It doesn't matter to me how it comes in. If you're unable to get the records, then you have to come to my office and sign a HIPAA form so that I can...
You can then send the letter to get it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So send the consent, the HIPAA consent to pick up the charts. Then what happens is once we get the charts in, my nurse and I will review them. And if we think that there is enough evidence there of a deviation or a breach in the standard of care, then Florida law requires us to go to a similar health care provider. So we have to look in the records and determine who is it and what is their specialty. And then we have to hire someone in that same specialty with that same training to review the standard of care to see if it's violated. So if you're in the emergency room, I can't get a family practice doctor to criticize the emergency room doctor or vice versa.
It's got to be somebody that does the same thing.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay. Now, here's what's really hard in medical malpractice, and that's why most people don't do it. You're getting essentially a peer review.
Right.
And it is hard to get one physician to criticize another. Not impossible. I mean, we do it. but it's not impossible, but it is difficult. And there are certain roadblocks in Florida law against plaintiff's attorneys to try and keep physicians from peer reviewing other physicians' charts. But if we're successful doing that, and the physician who is our reviewing physician says that there's negligent care and the care has caused an injury, a permanent injury, then it's required that they sign an affidavit under oath. The reviewing expert.
Oh, the reviewing expert does.
Has to sign an affidavit under oath identifying the areas of negligence and identifying what's caused by the negligence.
And is that where some of the reluctance comes in?
Exactly. You're putting it on paper then. Okay. So, and then when that happens, then you have to send, the plaintiff has to send what's called a letter of intent out to the healthcare provider. Now, somebody can come and file a complaint against me today or you for professional negligence without this letter of intent. But the letter of intent law is required for healthcare providers. And what it does is you send it out by certified mail. You have to identify the areas. You have to identify your expert. You have to identify all the records that they've looked at.
You put them on notice.
You put them on notice. Okay. And the statute of limitations is told for 90 days. And they have to do the same thing. They get together with their insurance company, review things, and they have to present an affidavit to deny the case.
So this is a process.
It is.
It's a, I mean, it's a process that you've got to go through a step at a time, and you got to be careful. I think for a lot of people, they are intimidated by that process. Of course, that's why I said at the beginning of the show, if I were in this situation where I thought this might happen, or I've had this with my clients, and I've said, you know, I need you to call Kim. Because you know this process and what to do and what steps to take.
Correct.
And it's just not something lay people know what to do.
And the statute of limitations in Florida is 2 years from when you knew or should have known that something was amiss, but not to exceed 4 years.
Okay.
So if you have a surgery in 2010 and you're calling me to complain that since this surgery in 2010, you've been having problems, your statute's probably run.
Okay.
Now, there are some circumstances where you get 4 years of a review, 2 years from when you knew or should have known, not to exceed 4 years. So if you can add the extra 2 years on and get your 4 years, what we call a statute of repose, a 2010 surgery might still be good.
Okay. You still look into it and be able to address it, even if it's 2013, 2014.
Correct.
Okay.
So it's tricky. It's
all
tricky.
Right. Well, it's a lot to cover. And this is why I wanted Kim to come on the program. Kim Balk is with us. She's an attorney with Ruth Ziffra and Caldwell. The website is ruziffra.com, Z-I-F-F-R-A, Rue, R-U-E, Z-I-F-F-R-A.com, ruziffra.com, 1-800-JUSTICE. Take a quick break, come back, and walk through this process with Kim. Stay right there.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read, you'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Welcome back. Kim Balk is with me. I've known Kim a long time and I respect her a great deal. And what she does is an attorney with Ruth Ziffra and Caldwell. She specializes in medical malpractice. She also does personal injury as well. And we're talking about kind of helping break down this thing that seems, kind of out of reach for a lot of people that is hard to really get your mind around, is that that's the area of medical malpractice. But Kim's doing a great job of breaking it down for us. And it really is a process that you go through. So, you know, we kind of jumped into what happens in this process. But I guess if we were to back up, attorneys, of course, they need to let people know about their services, so they advertise. Let's go back to that for a minute. What should people look for if they're going to hire somebody? Let's say somebody has had a serious injury, they've had a negligence on the part of a healthcare provider, or a family member has. It's a real deal. How do they go about selecting an attorney?
Well, in this day and age, during the advertising that goes on, I think it's most important that when you call an attorney, you find an attorney that does handle the issue that you're complaining about.
This is what they do.
Right.
Yeah.
Because there are loads of attorneys that advertise in areas that they don't specialize in, and then they will review the records or get the records in and call me.
How
and they've referred
that?
It to me.
Okay.
So if you want to be sure that you're getting an attorney that practices in a specialty area, you need to make sure that the attorney isn't just going to have you come in, sign you up, and then refer you out. So that's
so
number one.
They need to look at the experience. They need to look at the education. They need to look at,
right,
you know, the kind of the work they've done.
Yes.
Okay.
And those are situations that are now all on the web. Almost everybody has a website. And, you know, we're able to put down our credentials on the website. So that's one area to look into. Another area is just to ask. I mean, I have loads of people call and ask, will you be handling my case or is somebody else going to handle it?
Okay.
Tell me now.
Yeah, that's a good question.
So that, you know, that is another good thing that can be inquired about right from the beginning. And it's just one of those things you want to make sure that you're comfortable with the attorney and the law firm, that they have the resources and the finances in order to handle your case.
The
because
finances
these
are very important.
These are the most expensive cases to run.
They take time. The stakes can be high, and you've got to hire experts, and they're not cheap.
Correct.
And so, you know, if you've got somebody, and I'll try to be careful how I put this, but somebody that maybe is not as financially secure as a larger firm or a more established firm like yours, Ruud Ziffer and Caldwell, then they might not be able to see the thing through, or maybe they have to take shortcuts because they're running out of money.
Correct. So you have to be careful about that, to inquire about that. I have to tell people loads of times that I have looked at your medical records. I'm sorry, but I'm going to decline pursuing your case. And I will tell them why. I mean, I always try and have a verbal communication with them before they get the letter that I'm required to send saying,
right,
I've declined their case. But many times either I know from experience that pursuing the case is going to cost more than I'm going to be able to recover for the client. And I tell them the worst thing for a trial attorney is to do everything right. And then either at settlement or if you go to a jury verdict and you get a verdict from the jury, you've done everything right. You've brought them to trial. You've
That's
proven
all you
their
can
case.
Do, right?
That's correct. You've advocated for them. But then when you sit down and your costs eat up the recovery and you sit across the table and you have an unhappy client because they're not putting anything in their pockets.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to have that conversation.
That's a bad place for a trial attorney to be, to have done everything right and have an unhappy client.
Yeah, because then it's almost as if you've just done it all for the attorney and not for the benefit of the person you're really trying to help.
That's correct.
Yeah, I like that. That's part of that, you know, do no harm and do what's best for the person.
And it's part of the evaluation process. It's part of the investigation and the evaluation process.
Because you can't help everybody.
And there's a way that you have to be sincere about telling them why you're declining. And I mean, I tell people, I know you're injured and I know this has been a bad thing for you and your family, but I can't take your case and let you get your hopes up and 6 months from now say this isn't something that we should be pursuing. So
let's grab one more break. Okay, we need one more break, Lisa. Let's grab a break. We'll come back and talk with Kim Balk, attorney with Ruud Ziffer and Caldwell, RuudZiffer.com, 1-800-JUSTICE. We'll be right back.
If you had a serious health issue, wouldn't you want a second opinion? Is your financial well-being any different? Make sure your retirement plan is the best it can be for your situation. An independent financial advisor can review key elements like stock market exposure, diversification, and fees. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
And we are back. Kim Balk is in the studio with me, and she is an attorney with Ruth Ziffer and Caldwell, RuthZiffer.com, 1-800-JUSTICE. And we're talking about medical malpractice. And we kind of jumped around a little bit, but I want to make sure we went back and got about the, how to hire an attorney and all of that. The other thing I wanted to do was go back to, Kim, we've done this process where the provider's been notified. They've had an opportunity to respond.
Okay.
And then it's, okay, now it's, we're putting the foot on the gas pedal, right?
Right.
You say, okay, we're filing suit.
Correct.
Or you file suit. I guess there's, you know, we hear this, and again, I'm almost as much a layperson as the next person. At that point, could there be an offer to say, okay, no, we don't want you to sue us. We will settle this right now. Or, I mean, how does that process work?
That's rare that I would get
come on.
that I would get an offer to settle, or even if they've declined the case, an offer to settle or to do a pre-suit mediation. It happens, but in medical malpractice, it's fairly rare. So we go ahead and file the suit. We get the papers served from the court out, and then our phase called discovery begins. And discovery involves asking and answering questions by paper, by electronic filing now. And that requires participation from my client. And then it generally goes, after you do the initial phase of discovery on the paper, then it generally goes into the deposition stage.
This is a chance where they get to tell their story.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Where under oath you get deposed, and those can take hours at a time. So we go through the plaintiff's deposition and maybe some witnesses, and then we turn and we go to the healthcare providers and do the same thing, the deposition's there. And then after the depositions phase goes from the witnesses, then it goes usually into the expert phase. What have you reviewed and what are your opinions by deposition? And generally after that, if the case has been noticed for trial, the trial gives us a calendar of deadlines that we have to follow.
Okay.
Okay. And then and then in one of those deadlines is an obligatory court-ordered mediation where everyone has to come, sit around the table with a mediator, and informally discuss your case. Now, those are confidential meetings. They can't be used against anybody. Can't be said during a jury trial, well, at mediation, you said this and that, or you were willing to take XYZ money, or something like that. So mediation cannot be used.
It's like off the record.
Yes.
Okay.
And if it doesn't settle at mediation, then you go forward and you prepare the case and get ready to go pick your jury.
Okay. So you actually go to court. There's a judge. There's a jury. These are jury trials?
Yes.
Okay. And then each side, I mean, again, just like television, you know, each side makes their argument.
Yes.
And brings witnesses, brings medical experts in, all of that. And then
you let the jury decide.
And then at the end of the day, the jury decides, and then the jury has the authority to say, here's how much the compensation is?
Yes.
Okay.
Or none, maybe.
Or none.
Yes.
They might say, negligent, yes.
No.
Damage, no.
No. Okay. Correct. Correct. Hmm. And that's a viable jury verdict.
Well, I tell you what, Kim, this is a fascinating area. Thank God we have people like you to help us sort it out and to guide us in our time of need.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's my pleasure.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Kim.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.